tossing and turning all night like a salad, it's time to put those sleepless nights to bed for good. Enter Tenacy, my sleep saviors, and they have science to back up their sleep, anxiety, and pain-relieving powers. Back in 2016, they invested a $2.5 million grant to Middle Tennessee State University to study the hemp plant. Turns out their special patent-pending CBD-CBDA formula is twice as effective as CBD alone and can be more effective than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. So if you're tired of tossing and turning like a rotisserie chicken, then Tenacity's got your back with their range of great products from tinctures to gummies to lotions. Tenacity is my go-to when I can't sleep or I have way too much anxiety. I'm so glad that I discovered them. So go to Tenacity.com and use the code POWER to get 25% off your order. That's Tenacity.com, T-A-N-A-S-I, to get 25% off your first order with the promo code POWER. Are you tired of your digestive system feeling like a circus act gone wrong? Introducing Ritual's 3-in-1 gut superhero, Symbiotic Plus. A probiotic, prebiotic, and postbiotic all rolled into one. And with 25% off with the code POWER, there's no better time to check out Ritual. Let's break it down. Probiotics are like the cool kids at the gut party, keeping everything in check and making sure the good vibes are flowing. Prebiotics are their wingmen, fueling the party with all the right snacks to keep the good bacteria thriving. And postbiotics, well, they're like the cleanup crew, sweeping away the mess and leaving your gut feeling fresh and fabulous. So say goodbye to the gut drama, and remember, there's no more shame in your gut game. Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/power. Is everyone on the slow path towards addiction? Are all moderate drinkers a little bit addicted? We know that alcohol is an addictive substance that gets us hooked and then changes our brains to keep us hooked. But why does this process even start? In this episode, I will explain 15 risk factors that can lead us to become addicted to alcohol. You'll learn about emotional risk factors, genetic factors, and life circumstances that influence the risk of developing a problem with alcohol. So, let's dig in. Welcome back to the Sober Powered Podcast. I'm your host, Jill, and today we are answering the question, can anybody get addicted to alcohol? And I won't make you wait for it. The answer is no. This is a myth, and although it provides comfort, it can also make us judge other drinkers and prevent us from taking accountability and doing the work. What is true, though, is that any type of person can become addicted, not just losers or a certain type of people, all people, regardless of where they came from, their success, their educational level, anybody can, but most people won't. So most drinkers are not on the slow path towards addiction. Most people will have a casual relationship with alcohol for their entire lives. So does this mean that we are losers because we developed a problem? No, obviously. Does it mean that we're weak and that's why it happened? Also, no. And please check out episode 177, which was my 4-year soberversary episode where I talked about why I think I developed a problem. In this episode, I'm talking general risk factors, but if you want to know mine specifically, go listen to that. Alcohol is an addictive substance, yes, but we are not complete victims to it. And I know, I tell you constantly, you're not a weak willed loser. And I mean that, but at the same time, we have to take ownership of what led us to drink 1,000 drinks. I've been researching addiction basically every day since I quit drinking. It's generally accepted that addiction is about 50% nature, 50% nurture. So a mix between genetics and life circumstances. I'm gonna separate it into three components. socio-emotional factors, genetic, and life circumstances. I think the emotional part is really critical, and that's why I'm separating it. I have 5 risk factors to share with you in each category, and I'll recommend some episodes in the show notes too to get more information. Moving forward, a risk factor is something that increases the likelihood of us developing addiction, and a resilience factor is something that decreases the likelihood. As I'll explain in this episode, there are a ton of factors that increase your risk for developing a problem. If you have most or all, then I hope it's comforting and not demotivating. I feel like I was basically doomed to have an addiction, but knowing all of these risk factors gave me a clear idea on what I had to work on, and it validated the rest. The genetic vulnerabilities that I'm going to discuss obviously can't be changed, but a lot of this can be worked on. We have the power to make ourselves less vulnerable to addiction. If you stay vulnerable and don't do the work, then it's easy to either go back to drinking or pick up another addiction to replace it. So here are 5 socio-emotional factors. Number 1. The more you can tolerate emotions, the less likely you are to develop a problem. There's more to the story though. Some of us are more emotional and sensitive than others. My husband is a very level guy. He doesn't end up on either end of the emotional spectrum. He never gets excitable or angry. And because he rarely experiences extreme emotions, it's easier for him to deal with them. I flip-flop back and forth from the extremes. I spend a lot of time being very excitable and happy, or I'm super depressed. I spend less time in the middle. So because my emotions are more intense, I'm more vulnerable to getting overwhelmed and seeking external things to regulate my emotions. Number 2, your vulnerability to emotions like anger, anxiety, and depression all increase the likelihood of you drinking to cope. And similarly, your ability to self-regulate is a major risk factor. There's something called the window of tolerance, and it's how well you're able to tolerate emotions without getting overwhelmed. I teach this and most of the emotional stuff that we're talking about in anger management if you want to learn more, and I've also referred to it as frustration tolerance. So go listen to episode 199 if you haven't. But we all have a range of emotional experiences that we can tolerate before becoming overwhelmed or checking out. My husband has a very wide range and he rarely crosses over. Before I started drinking and during my drinking, I had the tiniest range ever. This means that I was frequently overwhelmed, out of control, or checked out. I genuinely believed that alcohol helped bring my emotions down to a level where I could manage them, but I wasn't actually managing them at all. A lot of us use alcohol to cope, but the more you drink to cope, the narrower your window of tolerance gets, and then the more you need to drink to cope. Part of doing the work in sobriety is expanding this window so you can tolerate more before getting overwhelmed or checking out. Number 3, a 2016 study from Sweden looked at resilience scores and the development of alcohol use disorder in almost 1.7 million men between 17 and 25, some of them being twins. They assessed resilience using a 9-point scale that rated the person's functioning in school, work, home environment, free time, and their emotional stability. This scale is also used as part of the evaluation for the Swedish military to predict a person's ability to deal with stressful situations. It asks questions like, "Past success gives me confidence. I believe I can achieve my goals even if there are obstacles. Under pressure, I stay focused and think clearly. I am not easily discouraged by failure. I am able to handle unpleasant or painful feelings like sadness, fear, and anger. And I know where to turn for help." Each of these is rated with 0 being not true at all, and the highest number being true all the time. And then the score is added up, and the higher the score, the higher the resilience. Of all the components of resilience, social maturity, interest, motivation, home environment, emotional control had the biggest impact on the risk of developing alcohol use disorder, especially social maturity. They found that a 1-point increase in resilience was associated with a 29% decrease in the odds of having a problem with alcohol. And a lot of the stuff we're talking about today is linked to resilience. So it might feel like you have such a long way to go, but even just a tiny, tiny improvement can make a big difference in your quality of life. Number four, the way that you think about things also impacts your risk of developing a problem with alcohol. Many of us drinkers make assumptions, we're easily offended, we take things personally, we should ourselves, catastrophize, minimize, magnify, overgeneralize, and we use all or nothing thinking. All of these destructive thought patterns cause us to get overwhelmed easier and spend more time being triggered and upset than we should. Number five, the more impulsive you are, the easier it is to become addicted. Drinkers struggle with delaying gratification. We're very impatient and will take instant gratification over a better reward that we either have to wait a little bit for or put effort into getting. We're not good at effort. Nothing normal and healthy, though, is going to give you instant gratification. So here are five different genetic factors that increase your risk of developing an addiction. So number one, we all have different genetics, but the easiest example is how we process alcohol. I explained alcohol metabolism in one of my first ever episodes if you really want to get into the details, but some people have more efficient enzymes than others. If you process alcohol really well, then you don't feel tired or have a headache during your drinking. You just feel great. I process alcohol really well, and I've never had a multiple day hangover. 99% of the time, I was cured and ready to drink again by the same afternoon. If you don't process alcohol as well, then you're more likely to have multiple day hangovers. So the better that you process alcohol, the more likely you are to drink a lot of it and drink more often because you can with less physical consequences. Number two, genetics also determines how vulnerable you are to alcohol-induced changes to the brain. Plus, some of us start out with more vulnerabilities, like I explained in episode 203, where some of us start out with less dopamine receptors. If you have lower levels of dopamine, then you're more likely to use alcohol to fix this deficit. And that is also a reason why ADHD increases the risk. And I have an episode all about ADHD too, if you're interested. So we don't all start out with the same brains, and some of us are more vulnerable than others. Number three, genetics determines the connectivity between different parts of your brain and how well they communicate with each other. Cognitive flexibility is important, and this is your ability to shift your behavior, attention, and thinking based on changes in the environment. Some of us just start out with less flexible brains. We are less adaptable than other people, and this puts us more at risk for getting stuck. I have a few episodes on cognitive flexibility and attention too. But when our brains are less flexible, we aren't able to use problem-solving skills as well, where we would apply things that we've previously learned to solve a problem. And even worse, it makes us reliant on stimulus-directed behaviors, which is an automatic response to something in the environment. This means we're very good at automatic responses to cues that make us want to drink. Number four, trauma changes the brain. One of my all-time favorite studies was a 2021 study in addiction biology that looked at the impact of childhood trauma on morphine and pain. So they had a group that experienced childhood trauma and a control group that did not, and none of these people struggled with addiction. The participants with childhood trauma liked morphine more and wanted it more than the group that did not have trauma. They also found that the control group disliked the effects of morphine towards the end of the session and experienced more negative side effects like nausea and dizziness. Morphine increased pain threshold for both groups equally, but the trauma group catastrophized their pain more than the control group. So overall, the trauma group had more depression, anxiety, stress, loneliness, lower perceived social support, and less self-compassion than the control group. Feelings of euphoria were also different, and this is my favorite part. The trauma group felt much more euphoria and felt high when the drug was at its peak. Euphoria in the control group was low and did not differ no matter what the dose was. So if alcohol feels amazing for you, then you're more likely to drink it, right? And plus, alcohol can be used to numb and escape. So if you have a history of trauma, alcohol or other drugs can feel like the solution. And number 5, sweet liking. Weird, but true. Sweet likers prefer solutions that are about 2.5 times the sweetness of soda. And studies have found that it takes these sweet likers 10 times longer to get 2 consecutive days of sobriety compared to people who do not prefer super sweet solutions. I love very sweet drinks, not with real sugar, but with artificial sweeteners so that it can just get disgustingly sweet. I love it. And sweet liking is not a learned behavior or something that's conditioned. It's a trait that can be seen within hours of birth. So if you have this trait, then it increases your risk of developing a problem and makes it harder for you to break free. Sweet liking occurs in a lot of people that have a family history of addiction, which is another risk factor in the genetic department and the life circumstances department. Super sweet stuff is very, very rewarding for the brain. Okay, now let's talk about 5 risk factors in the life circumstances category. Number 1, having a tough life. Some of us have less opportunities, more trauma, less supportive families, unsafe home environments, and more chronic stress. This can all lead to toxic thinking, which keeps us stuck. But the more adversity you face, the easier it is to develop an addiction. It's called ACE score, or Adverse Childhood Experiences score. You can take a quiz online to see your score, but people that have an ACE score of 5 or greater are 10 times more likely to have addiction issues. People with higher scores are also much more likely to have depression and physical health issues like diabetes or heart disease. Chronic stress, so if any of these things are happening as an adult, can cause our stress response to get desensitized, making us need more alcohol to get the same effect. So I explained this process in episode 201, and this is another big risk factor. Number 2, opportunity. I had morphine once, and it was the best feeling ever. But another main factor in developing an addiction is opportunity to the substance. Even though being bullied in school sucked for me, it didn't give me the opportunity to try all the drugs that my peers were doing in high school because they never invited me to anything. Many problem drinkers had the opportunity to try alcohol as a kid, and if you start drinking at 14 or younger, you significantly increase the risk of developing an addiction. And I explained how alcohol changes the teen brain in episode 29. Number 3, family history. If you watched a parent drink problematically as a kid, then you are more at risk. If you spent a lot of time around heavy drinkers, then you're more at risk. If you marry someone who was exposed to a lot of heavy drinking, then heavy drinking is normalized for them and they will have less of a problem with your behavior. And similarly, number 4, who you spend your time with. We can normalize anything. I have a family member that is struggling with gambling. And at first, I just could not understand why people got into gambling. And I was trying to find some empathy. I just don't see the appeal. But that's because I was never exposed to it. I don't know anybody who likes to gamble. My family member, though, is surrounded by people who gamble, both close family and friends. And the fun thing to do in their circle is go to the casino. So we can normalize anything that we want by who we surround ourselves with. And number 5, the spark, but like a bad spark. You can have all of these risk factors, but maybe you're still drinking casually. And that's because nothing has aligned in your life to ignite the spark. We saw a lot of people descend into addiction during COVID, and that's because the stress and isolation was that one missing piece that really accelerated their drinking. For some of us, it was the vid. For others, grief, trauma in adulthood, a bad marriage, a spouse cheating, or something else really horrible. This life event, or a few of them combined, accelerates our drinking. And looping back on what I said in the beginning, where most people will have a casual relationship with alcohol for their entire lives, sometimes a person can have a ton of risk factors, but they didn't have the spark, so they just keep drinking casually. If the vid never happened, a lot of people would have either been totally fine, or they would have stayed in kind of questionable gray area drinking zone where it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. But the thing to know about most of these risk factors, except the genetic ones, obviously, is that they can be worked on. If you normalize heavy drinking, you can find healthier friends and normalize getting up early and going hiking. If you have a narrow window of tolerance and you frequently get overwhelmed, then you can work on your perception and develop some coping skills. If you find yourself continuing to chase instant gratification, then you can work on that and practice patience. As we learn these skills and do the work in sobriety, our risk decreases. Someone asked me recently if I ever think about moderating. And the answer is truly no. It's not because I'm one of those grateful sober people who thinks that I get to be sober. I don't think that way at all. I know I have to be sober and I can't drink. But I've developed so many skills for handling life, and I've adjusted my life in ways to make it healthier and more fulfilling. At this point, I can't even come up with one thing that alcohol could do for me that I couldn't do for myself. Over time, your risk factors can decrease too if you develop some coping skills and get support. If you're looking for support, then I hope you'll check out my community and join one of our meetings. And I have some other support options in the show notes. So I hope this was validating. I hope this gave you some ideas on maybe the skills that you need to learn to stay sober. And if you enjoyed it, I'd really appreciate if you could share this episode with somebody and help get the word out there about this podcast, get it in front of people who need it. And I'll talk to you in the next one.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.